We're going to do today in Parshas Miketz is go through these psukim that deal with the dreams. It deals with the first eight psukim in Parshas Miketz, first eight psukim, and then it goes into the other psukim when Paro tells over the dream to Yosef HaTzadik. There's a lot of problems. So open up to the beginning of Parshas Miketz, Perek Mem Aleph. Start from Perek Mem Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, and then go on from there. This is what it's going to be, okay? Number one, it says, Mayim Miketz Shnasayim Yomim Paro Cholim Hinei Omed Al Yehor. At the end of 2 years, Paro was dreaming. He was standing in the first Pasuk. It says Ala Yaor on top of the river. If you look later on, when it goes through everything that he went through, and he tells over to Yosef HaTzadik what was there, it says the following. It says, "Vayomer Paro Yosef Chalom Chalamti Ufoser Ino So." There is no translator. Vani Shemati Alach Lemor Tishma Chalom Listor So. And it says the following. Yud Zayin. Vaydaber Paro Yosef Chalomi Hinani Omed Al Safa Yaor. I'm standing on the banks of the river. First time he says I'm standing on the river. Second time he says I'm standing on the banks of the river. Now in Pasuk Beis says Vinevani. Or Olos Sheva Paros Yafos Mare Brios Basar Eterna Vahu. Three descriptions. Number one, that they were beautiful of appearance, they were healthy of flesh, and they were grazing in the marshlands. If you look later on in Pasuk Yud Ches, it says Vine Mini Yor, same type of wording. Olos Sheva Paros Brios Basar Yafos Toar Batarena Vahu. Number one, it says Brios Basar first, and then Yafos Toar, the exact opposite. Number two, it says Toar in this Pasuk, as opposed to Mare in the first Pasuk. That's problem number two, that there's a difference in how exactly they're described. Number three, in Pasuk Gimel, it says the words, Vine Sheva Paros Acheres Holos Acherem in Yor, Ro'os Mare, Dakos Basar, they looked bad, very, very thin, and they stood by the Paros El Sfas Yor. If you look later on, it says, by Yutes, he calls them Dalos, Ro'os Toar Me'od, Rakos Basar. All three descriptions are completely different. The first time he only mentioned two descriptions, now he mentions three descriptions. It says, at the end over here, it says, Vatochalna and Pasuk Dalet, Vatochalna al Paros Arosa Mara, Vidakos Basar, Sheva Paros, Yifos Mara, Vavios, Vayikats Paro. That those Paros that were bad, and whatever it is, eats the Sheva Paros, Yifos Mara, Vavios, Vayikats Paro, and Paro woke up. Later on, there's an extra Pasuk over here. It says, in Pasuk Chof, it says, Vatochalna, Paros Arakos Aros, the Sheva Paros Arishonis Abrios. Chof Aleph says, Vatavona El Karbana, the cows went inside the thin cows. Lo Noda Kivo El Karbana, you couldn't tell that it went inside the big cows. Marian Ra, Kasher Batchila Voikats, their appearance was just as bad as it was before, they were just as thin and before, and then I woke up. An extra Pasuk that has absolutely nothing to do with the first time around. So that's there as well. I also didn't mention that in Pasuk Gimel it says that the cows, the bad cows, came from the river. In Paro, in the first time in your test, he says, Lo Re'isi Kahena Bokalaris Mitzayim Laroa, I've never seen cows like this before. So that's four major differences between them. Then when he goes into the Shibalim also have little differences that are mentioned, little differences in how the Shibalim are described, and the whole thing is a little bit strange. Tenumos are added onto the Shibalim. What's going on, and why does Paro change around his wording from the first time around when he sees the dream himself? Also, it comes to a big question. We all know that every word in the Parsha is meant to be exact, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't add on anything. Why do we have to spend four or five psukim adding on words telling us the exact same dream over again if there seemingly is no reason? It's the exact same thing. What's the point? What's the point behind doing such a thing? So clearly there are details, and we all know that there's got to be ideas behind this. The Rishonim say an interesting idea that Yosef HaTzadik was told a purposely wrong dream. That when Paro woke up, he purposely changed details so he could fool them and see if they were telling him the truth regarding this dream, to see if they were getting it from God or making it up by themselves. So he did it on purpose in that way. That's already a crazy answer, that Paro was trying to switch things around, and Yosef HaTzadik was saying to him, you switched this and you really meant to say that, and really this is what happened, and Yosef HaTzadik is actually correcting him in the middle of the dream. That's already a crazy answer. But what's the real pshat? So I'm giving you the Derech of the Nitziv. It's a little bit different from the Ramban. The Ramban is the classic way of going through the dream. The Nitziv is a little bit different. He says the following. The Sova, the years of satiety, where there's great things going on. Am I pronouncing that correctly, by the way? Satiety? Is it satiety? Satiety? Satiety, thank you. So that's that. When they saw the satiety that was going on, they realized the satiety would only happen to Mitzrayim. The rest of the lands all around Mitzrayim, they had normal years. There was no extra rain. There were no bumper crops. Not anything special. It was only in Mitzrayim where there was sova, where that svia had happened, and that's that. The rav, however, the hunger, happened in two different parts. In Mitzrayim, it was a true rav, a hunger where nothing was growing. Nothing was going on. There was no food. There was no anything in all of Mitzrayim. Around Mitzrayim, the areas nearby in Mesopotamia, in the Middle East, and all other places in Africa, all those areas around, there was food. But there wasn't a lot of food, and it was a batsoris. A batsoris is a little bit different from a rov. It means that it was less food than normal. Now, in normal situations, you have a normal batsoris, a normal time where there's less food than normal, usually who suffers? The poor people suffer. The rich people are able to pay money for bread. They pay $100, $200 for a loaf of bread. They have money. They can afford it. It works out well for them. But the poor people are the guys that suffer because they can't afford any bread. They have nothing to eat, and they're the ones that starve. Says the Netziv, this Batsoris was completely different. If you look throughout the Parsha, it's the rich people that were affected by it, and the poor people were not. There were spices growing. There were herbs growing in the field. But none of that food, and the fodder that was growing for the animals, that was growing. There was grass in the fields, there were herbs on the ground, there were spices. Look what Yaakovinu told the Shvatim to take these spices down to Mitzrayim. There clearly were spices that were growing throughout Eretz Canaan. The problem was that the good stuff wasn't growing. The wheat wasn't growing. The barley wasn't growing. The rice with anything else that they might have had, any other grain that they might have had that they used to make normal food, that they didn't have. And that was a different type of batsoris that they couldn't get before that. The rich people were the ones that were suffering. Clearly, Paro was not standing in the river. That wasn't the point of the dream. The point of the dream was to say that Paro was standing on the banks of the river. But the first idea that Paro is trying to say is we're trying to start off to tell you that Mitzrayim's economy was entirely based on the Nile River. There is barely any rain in Mitzrayim, and it's very, I mean, I don't know for sure, but the rainfall is much, much less than it is in normal places. It's right by a desert, and the only way from Mitzrayim to have an economy that works is to have the Nile River with its tributaries and all the canals that come from it, for it to go over all the different areas of Mitzrayim. Without the Nile River, there's absolutely nothing. So when it says that Paro was standing in the river, it meant literally Paro needed the river in order for there to be anything. But Paro described it to Yosef HaTzadik as he saw it. I'm really standing on the banks of the river. It's just the Pasuk telling us that the Nile River meant something for Mitzrayim. The first dream that he saw with the cows revolves around Egypt, and it's referring to Egypt itself. Here's the idea. People see things completely different from one another. The king sees food in one way, different from the rest of his people. He's going to look at what food is available, very different from everyone else around, from anyone else in different places, and that's why we switch off the descriptions. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you a klal, a general idea of what they look like, the cows, the big cows and the thin cows, and Paro is describing them according to how he sees them, what he's used to, and what he sees them as opposed to what a normal person who is not a king, how they would describe them, how they would look at it. Now here's what it is. The 7 years, the seven cows, were fattened by the swamp, by the Ahu. They were grazing right around there, meaning those seven fat years were only happening near the river. A reference to Egypt in Mitzrayim. That the Svea would be there and not in other places. And then there were seven other cows, 7 other years, in the exact same place. They came up from the river. They came up around that area in Mitzrayim that would happen right afterward, literally right after the 7 years of satiety were over, satiety were over, and those 7 years would be 7 years of rov, where the cows looked different. They looked gaunt. They looked thinner than normal, and there were years in which there was nothing there. Standing by the cows, they stood by the fat cows for a little bit, and then they ate them. That tells you that it was only going to be there and not elsewhere. Paro didn't find that significant. He didn't mention it to Yosef HaTzadik, because he said it's not that big of a deal, but they stood there for a second and then they ate them. He just said, they ate them, and that's good enough. Not realizing that that was an integral part of the dream, that it was only going to be in Mitzrayim and not anywhere else. Now, when people see good things, they normally describe it the way they see it. And that's that. It looked good and it looked whatever it is. When people see bad things, they over-exaggerate. They say, it's the worst thing I've ever seen before in my life. The absolute worst thing. I've never seen anything like it. Paro describing what this dream meant to him was a little bit more in detail for that reason. He looked at the cows and he said, I've never seen such thin cows in my life. When he described the big cows, he said, they were big cows. I've seen big cows before. They were really big cows. And that's what he was trying to say. The Chumash is telling us that this Rav was going to be so abnormal that he had never seen anything like this type of a Rav before, where nothing grew. No grass, no herbs, no vegetables, no grains, nothing grew in all of Mitzrayim. That no Rav ever was like this one before. There will never be a hunger like this ever again. There will never be something in so bad. Because you think about Mitzrayim, you have the Nile River, you think the Nile River would help things grow, and it didn't. Nothing grew. Nothing was working. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to point out. And that makes us forget things. When we see bad, no matter how much good we got, when we see bad, the bad makes us forget everything good that happened before, and all we think about is this bad thing that happened right now. So Paro said they were eaten up, and you couldn't tell that the seven fat cows were there in the first place. Because as soon as it comes to a hunger like this, you don't even remember that last year you had a ton of food. All you remember is that right now, things are really, really bad. And that's what Paro felt, not what he actually saw in the dream. It shows us how we react to what happens, and that explains parts of the differences in the dream. The second dream is for the lands outside of Mitzrayim. It does not mention that the sheaves of wheat were fatter than they normally were. It just mentions that they were nice, big sheaves of wheat. That's all they were. Why? Because outside of Eretz Mitzrayim was just normal years. There were normal sheaves of wheat, normal everything. That's all it was. There was nothing special about anything. And that's why, right before it says it in both places, it says by the Shibboleth, it says, Vihine, it says in Pasuk Hey, Vihine with a psik, a little line there. Sheva Shibboleth, behold, there were Sheva Shibboleth. It separates them from the cows before. The fat cows representing Mitzrayim means he's never seen anything like it. Satiety that you've never seen before. By the Shibboleth, it's completely different. These Shibboleth were normal Shibboleth that grew up in a normal way because that's what it was like in Eretz Canaan, in Mesopotamia, in the Middle East, anywhere around Africa. It was a normal year where things were going in the normal ways. That's the concept of the second dream. They're healthy and good. They're not overly fat. And olos bekana echad, meaning they're all coming up in the same kana, the same, they look like they were coming from the same area, meaning all of Eretz, the Arutzos, all of the lands surrounding Mitzrayim were all the same. It was the exact same thing over and over again throughout everywhere. It's wheat. It's referring to wheat because that's what grows in other lands and that's what they wanted to base themselves on. And it was supposed to represent the human food. Meaning, there were other foods that still would survive. Barley might be, because barley is more animal fodder. Beans might grow. Herbs might grow. Spices might grow. But it's the wheat that's not going to grow in the other lands. It's going to affect the rich people, not necessarily the poor people. In the next 7 years, the wheat is going to be too small, too tiny, you can't eat such wheat. And that's what it means, that those sheaves of wheat, the seven sheaves of wheat that were smaller, thinner, that looked disgusting, ate the seven bigger things of wheat, because it's going to again make them be forgotten, but not totally forgotten. It's not, Paro never describes it as, you couldn't tell that the wheat ate the other wheat. He doesn't say that. Maybe the thinner wheat did get a little bit bigger. But the point is that it's not as bad as it'll be in Mitzrayim. Outside of Eretz Mitzrayim, it's going to be bad, but not so bad. It's the richer people that were affected and not anybody else. Don't think that these Chartumim, the magicians that were working for Paro, were a bunch of idiots. They weren't fools. They understood that if you had two dreams and your economy is based on two things, your food is based on meat and the wheat that you're growing in your fields. You know that. If you have these two things in a dream, cows and wheat, and you see that there's thin ones and fat ones, it's obvious that it's referring to some type of a hunger, especially when the Nile River is involved, especially when the king is seeing something like this. You know that it's referring to this type of an economical ordeal, some type of recession that you're going to have in your economy, and in this case, a complete depression. That's what they thought the Chartumim realized that. But they looked at Paro and said, normally, a king is unaffected by a rov. A king doesn't see these things because he's unaffected by it. He gets the good food. He's going to be fine with it. The problem was, is that in this type of a dream, Paro would be affected. Because the rov will mean there's nothing there. In all the other lands around, there will be little things growing, but it's not going to be kingly foods. So Paro would be affected by this type of a dream. That's what they didn't realize. So they came up with these crazy pshatim. Seven daughters you're going to have, and the seven daughters are going to be taken away. Seven cities are going to be had by you, and those seven cities are going to be captured. They came up with crazy pshatim, getting around the pashat pshat, the most simplistic explanation of what the dream would be, because they figured it shouldn't have anything to do with Paro. They were wrong. They were absolutely wrong. It was the simplest explanation. That's what Yosef HaTzadik was trying to tell them. It's very, very simple. And those were the details of the dreams, and this is what it referred to: how the Rav was going to affect Mitzrayim, how the Betzoras was going to affect Eretz Canaan. That's the pshat, by the way, why Rashi tells us that the Shvatim were sitting with Yaakov. You know, Yaakov Avinu said, "Lama Tisro, why do you show yourselves like you have food?" Granted, there's food out here. Granted, imagine they had sheep; they had tons and tons of sheep. How can they be hungry if you own flocks and flocks and flocks of sheep? You could just check them. You'll always have meat readily available. In theory, you'll always be able to have that. What's the problem?
Sheep need to eat.
Granted. No, but there was grass.
What do you mean? Sheep jerky?
That's exactly... You can have anything. Regardless, if you have sheep and you have animals, and we said that there are herbs and there are grass out there, you'll be able to at least have something. You'll for sure be able to eat something. There's always an availability of food. That wasn't the problem. It's that they were making themselves look like they had more food than they actually had, and that's why Yaakov sent them down to Mitzrayim. Because it wasn't a total love as we picture it. It was about Zoras. It was bad. The richer people, the people that were used to better things in life, were suffering. But everybody, even the poor people, still had food. They were eating their normal foods that they normally had. They just didn't have a lot of it. They didn't have enough to be able to be satisfied. And that's what it was like, the Batsoris outside of Mitzrayim. But in Mitzrayim, without Yosef HaTzadik, they would have starved. There would have been absolutely nothing to eat. They wouldn't have had anything at all. That's the ideas behind the dreams themselves. Now, why did Paro automatically believe Yosef HaTzadik? After the dream ends, and he tells them all the translation, Yosef HaTzadik tells them everything there. He looks in Avata Yir of Paro Ishnabom B'chacham, he should make Pekidim, there should be people in charge. And then it says the following, Lamed Zayin, Vayitav Adover B'enei Paro, the matter was good in the eyes of Paro B'enei Kol Avada. Vayomer Paro Avada, Nimsa Kazei Isha Sharoch Elokim Bo. Do you see a man who has the Spirit of God in him? How did he know it was a Ruach Elokim? How do you have any idea there was a Ruach Elokim within Yosef? And then he says, there's no one like you. Only by the throne will I be greater than you. I'm going to put you in charge of all of Eretz Mitzrayim. You don't know this guy. This guy is 30 years old, just came out of jail. He's been serving a sentence for 12 years down there. 12 years. And you put him in charge of all of Mitzrayim? Who would do such a thing? Granted, he translated your dream. But who would do such a thing? And then, he took his ring off his hand. He put it on Yosef's hand. He put on linen clothing on Yosef, these special clothing. And he put this golden necklace around his neck. For what? What did Yosef do? Test him. See what happens in a year or two. If it's Sova for the next year or two, then you know he's right and put him in charge. But until he's proven himself, you can't say anything to him. He hasn't done anything yet. He hasn't done a single thing yet. Why is Paro automatically listening to him? So here's the idea. Says Alina Lushabeh, Rabbi Yitzhak Zilberstein, there are two different types of chokmah out there in the world. Two different types of chokmah are the following. There are people that are smart naturally. They're born under a certain mazel, and they're bright. They know things. They know things. It's automatic. They have great memories. They have an ability to learn things from books, and they read a book once and they get it down. Maybe they do it twice. They have great memories and an ability to see things inside, like a strong guy. There are people that are just born really, really strong. You go up to them and say, how often do you work out? And he just says, you know, I don't work out very often. Well, that's just, it's not normal, but there are people that are born that way. There are people that are just born big and strong, and they didn't really work on themselves whatsoever. There are people like that, or rich people. There are people that are born rich, and they were just born in a family that had a lot of money, and that's that. They're born that way. That was their mazel. That was that. That's one type of person. There's another type of person that is a chokhma from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That doesn't come naturally. It comes when God feels he deserves it. If he works hard enough, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts in a little bit to him, gives him a little bit more than what he had, and he becomes brighter, he becomes greater. What's the difference between the two? How can you tell if the chokhma was natural or if the chokhma was given to you as a gift from God? You see if people argue with his logic. If people argue with you and they say that can't be true because of this, that means that his chokhma came from a mazel, came from some type of constellation that allowed him to be wise, that allowed him to be smart. Somebody else came from another mazel. He doesn't get it. I don't know what you're talking about because I think the other way. That's one way. That's one thing, one way of understanding it. But if everyone is masking, everyone agrees with what that guy just said, they hear it from him and they say, wow, that guy sounds good. He really sounds smart. And everyone agrees that that person is smart, that means it's a chokhmah of Elohim. That is a godly wisdom where God gave him a little bit of extra power so that everyone agrees with him and he makes sense to everyone. There are no arguments. Paro had just called in all the chachamim and all the magicians throughout his entire land to translate his dream. He called in everybody. They're all sitting in the palace. This was a collection of the greatest chachamim in all of Mitzrayim. And there were bright people, wise people in Mitzrayim. Think of inviting over the top professors in all the colleges throughout the country. The top guys. Bringing them in. And this 30-year-old guy, this guy who's clearly not Egyptian, who is not from your nation, gets up there. He stands up and he tells over a translation of the dream and no one argues. Remember, they all said their own pshatim. They all said their own idea, their pshat in the dream. And Yosef said his pshat and everybody said, that's good. That's exactly what we were saying. That's exactly what's right. Everyone agreed with it. When Paro saw that everyone agreed with it, he knew this is not a chokhmah that's natural. This is not a chokhmah that comes from a mazel. This is not just stam, a wisdom. This guy has a chokhmas Elokim. This is a godly wisdom that nobody can argue with. Ruach Elokimbo. This guy's right. This guy is 100% correct. That's why he appointed him immediately. He saw that he had to have something there. And that's why he dressed him up and gave him everything. Because it's clear this is the message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, somebody would have argued on him. Somebody would have said a dissenting opinion. Nobody did it. Must be it's true. And he gave him big day sheish. Linen clothing. Rashi says, by big day sheish, what were these clothing that he was given? Rashi doesn't say, what would you think? Big day sheish, how would you translate that if you're Rashi? Sheish. It's linen, right? So what would you say in Rashi? How do you say linen in Hebrew? You definitely know. No. Come on. Wool and linen is semer. And pishtin, right? In Parshas Tetzav and Parshas Truma, when sheish is mentioned, Rashi says every time, pishtin. Pishtun, pishtun. That's what he says every time. Here, he translates sheish differently. Dover chashivushu b'mitzrayim. It's something choshuv in Egypt. That's what this linen clothing is. It's choshuv in Egypt. So all the meforshei Rashi immediately latch on to Rashi and say, why didn't he just say pishtun? Why didn't he say linen? Why did he say it's a dover chashivushu b'mitzrayim? So the Sifrei Chachamim says that Egypt worshipped the Nile River. The Nile River is known as Pishon. Pishon in Bereishis. Pishon because flax grew right around the sides of the river. And therefore, Pishon was very chashiv to them. He said, the Sifrei Chachamim says, there was a chacham that came from Eretz Yisrael. And he told me the following. I don't know where this Sifrei Chachamim lived. I would assume in Europe. But this chacham from Israel told the Sifrei Chachamim the following. It was not linen. Because otherwise, Rashi would have said pishtan. It's not linen. Rather, it was chashuv with color, made with different silks, and it was worn on top of the clothing as sort of like a jacket. And that's the type of thing that it was. And it's mashma for Rashi, because he didn't say the word pishtan. It's davar chashivushu b'mitzrayim. It's not just some linen. Everybody wore linen in Mitzrayim. That's what they grew right outside the Nile River. Everybody wore linen. This was instead some type of a chashuv, a piece of clothing that was different from linen, and they called it big day sheish, but it really wasn't linen. It was something else entirely. That's his here's pshat over here. The Mizrahi seems to say it was only chashev for the Mitzrayim, that they thought so because they didn't have anything else there. But Yuma Lamed Dalet says that the Kohanim Gedolim wore pilusin that were worth 12 mana. Pilusin is linen clothing that were worth 12 mana, very expensive stuff that no one else could get. There clearly was very expensive linen stuff. So according to the Mizrahi might say that, but it seems from the other Meforshim that there was linen stuff that was really, really expensive. But there's another pshat. And before we get to that, yes, Mr. Loeb.
Yes, I just wanted to understand correctly. As far as Yosef, was it that he had general Ruach HaKodesh, he can interpret all of them, or he was given specifically?
We know that Yosef HaTzadik was a Navi.
At that point.
Yosef HaTzadik was definitely a Navi. Whether this was a Nevuah or just Ruach HaKodesh that he got at that moment, we don't know. But it definitely was something that came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why he started off saying, Pishronim are only Levokim. They're only for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can't translate it. It's really from Hashem. That's what he understood it as, and it came to him in some way. Whether it was actual Nevuah, and he got a Nevuah right there, a prophecy right there, or he just said Ruach HaKodesh, that we don't know. There is a Meforish called, I believe it's the Panach Raza. The Panach Raza says that Yosef HaTzadik had a dream the night before with the translation of Paro's dream. So when Paro told him the dream, he was telling it over to him, and Yosef HaTzadik said, I had that dream last night, and he translated according to the dream that he had the night before, that he had seen the dream in a dream. That makes sense that it was a Nevuah. It was a prophecy of what he had to know for the next day. That would be one way of understanding it. But I don't know whether it was actual Nevuah or Ruach HaKodesh that gave it to him, but it was definitely a Me'elokim. There's no question about that.
Yes. Does a prophet have any duty to seek to live in help his own Nevuah come true?
Yes.
But
from the Yerushalmi brachas.
Is that God's business to do that?
A Navi has to make sure that the Nevuah happens. However, if it's bad, then he doesn't have to go through to make sure that bad happens. That's why Yosef HaTzadik specifically said, let somebody be in charge of it, so that we make sure that during the years of satiety, something gets taken care of. That's how he understood, because you do have to help out that idea. That's the concept behind it. So yes, he did. That's also the reason why he did everything in last week's Parsha, to be able to, or in this week's Parsha regarding the brothers. He knew we had to make sure that his dreams that happened in last week's Parsha were going to come true.
At the extent of his stress.
Correct.
The stress and everything else.
Correct.
Covered up.
Correct. He has to make sure. 100%. That's what a Navi has to do. Okay, so the Berba Sada says another answer.
One thing that you said before, that there was no real destitute food shortage. Mm-hmm. It does say when you see him alone, a moose.
There's no question. The question of whether or not Yaakov Avinu was being facetious or he was trying to say, and it might have gotten worse as time goes on, that's a different story. And then what happened at the end of Parshas Vayigash is another story. What happened over there by the last 5 years of the world, it's another story altogether. But that's for a different time. That's not exactly part of the dream itself. The Berba Sada says an answer over here regarding the linen that really takes you out of the box a little bit. Mitzrayim knew that there was a skula to wear linen. We see that from the fact that their mummies wore linen when they were passed away, and there was something to wrapping yourself in white linen that helps you. And that's why all their officers wore it and their kings wore it. The only question is why? What was the idea? I'm sorry? We do also. We also wear that with linen clothing. I mean, we wear a kittel, right? And there is something to it. What's the pshat behind white linen that's so special? Here's the pshat. It's from the Yalkut Ruvaini. The Berba Sada doesn't quote it, but it's the Yalkut Ruvaini says it. One who dies wearing linen clothing, even if you die outside of Eretz Yisrael, all of your accusers become defendants. Any satan that you have becomes a defendant, and he starts to protect you rather than accuse you in Shemayim. It's only a milah to wear linen clothing when it's worn without any other levush. Nothing else can be worn with it. It has to be worn by itself. If even one string is added on of anything else, of especially not wool, because that's shatness, but even of cotton, of silk, of ran, of polyester, anything that is added onto that linen, pasul bo. It's not a true linen clothing, and this skula doesn't work. Paro knew this chokmah. He knew this wisdom. And therefore he only wore white linen. And that's why he spoke with Gaiva to all of his cartoonmen and told them, I'm a god. Because none of the magicians of Mitzrayim could affect Paro, and they didn't know why. They had no idea why they were unable to affect Paro, but the reason why they were unable to affect Paro with any of their magics, any of their tricks, any of their spells, the reason why they couldn't is because he wore this white clothing. And Paro knew it. He knew this chokmah, and he was the only one in Mitzrayim. He told others, very few others about it, but he knew that that's why nobody could affect him. Yosef figured it out as well. Yosef was a bright person. He figured it out as well. It keeps away Ayin Hara, it keeps away the Yetzer Hara, and keeps away all magic. He understood it from the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. There is no one in greater danger than the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. The holiest person on the holiest day, in the holiest spot. The Satan does everything he can to knock down that Kohen Gadol and not allow him to go through with his job. So we specifically tell the Kohen Gadol to wear white linen clothing. He takes off all his gold, and all he wears is a ksonis made of linen. He wears a mechmasayim made of linen, some type of a hat made of linen, and a belt, an avnet made of linen. Only linen, specifically white linen, and nothing else added on. In order, only white and only linen, in order to make sure that he wouldn't be in that grave danger. Yosef HaTzadik understood that, and therefore asked for white linen, big day sheish. And Paro wanted to be mevatel the skula. He didn't want Yosef HaTzadik to get it, so he gave him, along with the big day sheish, a revid zahav, a little thing of gold that went around his neck, to knock out the power of that linen, to make sure that the magic would affect Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik didn't want Paro to think, or Paro to know, that he realized this skula, this secret of his. So he wore the revid zahav in front of Paro, so Paro would think he didn't get it. But as soon as he went away from Paro, he took away the revid zahav and he put it away, and he was only wearing the white linen. That's all he wore. That's the pshat, and therefore he was unaffected by any of the magicians in Mitzrayim. Anybody that tried doing something to him in Mitzrayim did not affect him because he was wearing that white linen specifically. But there's more to the white linen than just that. There's Ramazan. There are hints that were being hinted to over here why it says sheish and not pishtun. Sheish is a weird word. Why doesn't it say linen? So we said before, maybe it wasn't linen from the Sifrei Chachamim. Here's another pshat. A melech must utilize two different midos, chesed and gevura, when he's a king. Sometimes he has to show his face of chesed, kindness and rachamim to his constituents so that they know, I'm with you, I'm going to help you, I'm going to do everything I can for you. And sometimes he has to act with gevura and be strong and say, get away, stop it, and stop other people from coming near. That's the concept of chesed and gevura that comes together. Sheish lavan is white linen, is a reference to chesed. The revid hazahav, the revid hazahav, that golden necklace, is a reference to gevura. Lavan is chesed. That's the color that they use for the color of chesed. Revid is a gematria of 216. Same gematria as gevura. That's what it stands for. And that's why we wore the revid hazahav. Aside from that, for those who know these types of things, zahav is supposed to stand for midas adin anyway. Chesed is kesef. That's kesef. Nechsof, nechsafti, to desire, while zahav is din. But that's another thing altogether. See, Yosef had to be a rachamon, help out the people by giving them the food that he needed, but also have that gevura, be matal ema on them, give them fear at the same time so they know that he's the king, he's the one that's in charge. It's both them at the same time. The Ben Ish Chai says, sheish is a remez to Yosef HaTzadik. Why? Yosef is 156. This is the classic Ben Ish Chai. Yosef is 156. 156 is the Shem Havaya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, times 6. 26 times 6 is 156. By him wearing Big Day Sheish, it means he surrounded himself with HaKadosh Baruch Hu on all four sides, top and bottom. No matter where he looked, wherever he was, he surrounded himself with a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And that's what it means by Big Day Sheish. It didn't mean literally, of course, there's a pshat, literally clothing. He's wearing linen clothing. But aside from that, he had a lavush. He surrounded himself with a Kaddish Baruch Hu wherever he went. And that's the concept. Yosef was misgaber on his Yetzirah. We know what happened with Eshes Potiphar with Zuleika. That he was able to be misgaber, strengthen himself, and be and not give in to his type as his Yetzirah with Eshes Potiphar. Potiphar. He was Zocha the big day Sheish. He turned his Yetzirah into a Yetzir Tov, into something that helped him. Sheish is the gematria of Yetzir, Yetzir, says the Ben Yishchai. Yetzir is 300, Yetzir is 300. Two Yetzir, his Yetzir and his Yetzir Tov both work toward the same thing, both working toward the same idea. And here he says just an unbelievable pshat. The Vav is supposed to represent, I don't know, that I'm just going to throw that out for you, that it's the Midah of Yesod. But what it does supposed to represent throughout all these Sfarim, through the Ben Yishchai, through all these Sfarim that they quote Chassidish Sfarim, the Vav represents Erva. It's because it's supposed to look like the Erva. That's what the Vav represents. There's a difference between Kadosh and Kadesh. Kadosh means to be holy. Kadesh means a male zona, male prostitute. The difference between the two words is how you use the Vav. If a person uses his Vav correctly, then he becomes Kadosh. If he uses the Vav incorrectly, then he becomes a Kadesh. Yosef HaTzadik, who represents the Midah of Yesod, we all know there's Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and it doesn't go in order on Sukkot. Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David. Yosef is the sixth Ushpiza, the sixth Midah of Chesed, Gevura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. Somehow, that Midah of Yesod, which we don't fully understand, represents the power of being able to overcome Arayis, to overcome the bad Vav, the evil Vav that's out there. Since he was metaking that Vav by Ishes Potiphar, he was given the bracha of Bigdei Sheish, the clothing of Sheish, specifically that number of six. That's the Vav that he ended up having. There's a lot more to it, obviously. Yosef HaTzadik and what he stood for. There's more to it in the fact that he added on a hey to his name, Edus Behosef Samo, in which we say that he added on a hey to his name from the fact that he was Mekadish himself by Ishes Potiphar. But if a person does the act correctly, then a Vav becomes Kadosh, and that's what we're representing by saying Sheish. So our summary is we went through the dreams, understanding the meaning of the dreams, and although we didn't go through every single detail and why they were different from one another, you get the basic idea and you can plug it back in what it means to have the dream of Mitzrayim, that's the cows, and then the dream of all the other lands, and that's the shibboleth, the wheat. And the difference is between a ra'av and a betzoris that happened. We also said why Paro trusted Yosef more than anyone else, because he saw that his wisdom was a greater wisdom than anything he'd ever seen. It was a chokmas elokim, and everybody was maskim to him. That's number two. Number three, the power of sheish and mitzrayim. Sheish, either it means some special type of clothing, or it means linen, a special type of linen, and the point of having that linen, according to Yalkut Ruvaini, to keep away magic, to keep away the tuma away from himself, and that Yosef was zocha to it by being makadish himself and not allowing himself to fall prey to Ishes Potiphar. That's the power of the Vav. That's what he was able to get, and that's why, by the way, it's something like, I don't remember the full number, it's something like 82% of the psukim in the Torah start off with a Vav. It's not just done, and this, and that, and this, and that. Almost every parak, you can mamash look through every parsha. Almost every parak and every pasuk and everywhere starts off with a Vav. All over the place. And it's because Vav is that Kadosh letter, it brings on Kedusha. That's the concept, that's the idea behind it. First parak in all Bereishis. Bereishis starts with a Beis. Every other pasuk in the first parak starts with a Vav. It's an unbelievable, it's just something out there, something to continue for future years, to be able to think about for future years, but not for right now. Have a good